It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, Episode 110. The Nats went on the road to L.A. and took two out of three from the highly respected Dodgers. Feels like quite an accomplishment in a series win. Also, we're looking ahead to the huge celebration at Nats Park starting Friday with the Astros coming to town. Five-year anniversary, Selly, of the 2019 World Series already, believe it or not. Plus, our traditional deep dive into some of the top prospect performances of the last few days. It's Bustin' Loose Baseball, Episode 110, and it starts right now.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome into Bustin' Loose Baseball. I'm Grant Paulson. I'm joined by Toby Altizer, producer Darius Dameron, making everything sound good for us. Lots to get into. Nats take two of three from the Dodgers. And Toby, to this point, 18 games in, I think you got to like how this team's playing. If you were reasonable with your expectations coming into the year, you didn't have any delusions of grandeur here. They're 8-10. They have blown a game in the ninth inning. They had another game get away with some questionable management last week. You flip that, you could pretty easily be 10-8 on the year. You're over 500, and you just took a series from L.A. You had a winning road trip coming back home. There's a lot to like about how things are going.
Yeah, I mean, even on a good baseball team, if you're going out west for a three-series road trip, nine games, you're taking on San Francisco for three, then you're taking on Oakland for three, then the Dodgers for three, you know, you'd take 5-4 in a heartbeat, even if it's a really good team, much less a team that's kind of in a rebuild and trying to develop their guys. So I was impressed with their road trip overall, especially, you know, it's crazy to think about how disappointing that A series was because, you know, one decision here, one little thing here, and all of a sudden, you know, you're winning some of those ball games and you're not losing the series to the A's, but they end up bouncing right back. You've got a rookie on the mound making his debut in the opener against the Dodgers, and he pitches really well. And then Jake Irvin in the finale of the series pitches really well as well. And, you know, Corbin, as much as we like to rag on him, you know, we talk about it on this podcast some, you know, they need someone that eats innings, and he eats innings for them. And so, you know, in the second game of that series, obviously not great results from Corbin on the mound, but he also helped out the bullpen a little bit by giving you at least a little bit of length. So impressive win in that Dodgers series, because that's a really good baseball team where, you know, there's maybe, you know, one or two or three guys on the Nationals 26-man roster that you feel like could hang out and contribute for the Dodgers. And meanwhile, they took two or three from them.
Yeah, the Jake Irvin situation continues to develop favorably. Let's get into that. A developing situation. He went six shutout with four hits scattered, one walk and six strikeouts. And for the second time in as many starts, Davey yanked him at six innings and sub 75 pitches. So before we get into Irvin and how well he's pitched, let's just talk about that. I didn't love that Davey did it last time, but I'm not going to get too upset early in the season, whatever. For a second straight outing, when he's carving up an opponent to be on the verge of a seventh inning, when you're sub 75 pitches and to not let him break through, know, you do it 5 days ago, that's one thing. You come back 5 days later, you get the opportunity again, and Davey goes, I'm still not going to let you pitch a seventh. And look, someone might look at the game and say, well, it worked. He got Garcia to face the lefties. Yeah, he walked the guy, but two-thirds of an inning. Then Harvey came in and finished the seventh. He threw the eighth. He was dominant in 20 pitches, and then Finnegan worked the ninth. But here's the problem. It's not just about winning and holding on to a shutout for a shutout win of the year and a two-run lead. This is also about the viability, sustainability of the bullpen and trying not to overwork those guys and trying to make sure that Hunter Harvey isn't cooked by July. It's the second time, I believe, on this trip in the last few days that he's gone out and pitched an inning in the third and had a couple up-downs. And this was completely avoidable, in my opinion. So the question is, with a guy like Harvey who's had arm problems, not just in Washington, but before that in Baltimore, like, do you really want to continually ask him to get you four or five outs? And the answer should absolutely be no. So I didn't like the decision again from Davey on the 73 pitch yanking of a starting pitcher.
Yeah, and it's odd, too, because if you look at last year, when he started the year, he was kind of on that, you know, 70-pitch limit. But just looking back at the game logs last year, the fewest amount of pitches he threw, including in AAA, was 64 on April 14th, 65 on April 20th, and then it was up to 75, 75, 76, 77. But then basically his entire time in the major leagues, obviously it's a little further into the schedule when he got called up, but he was throwing 85, 90 pitches, even throwing over 100 pitches. So it's not as if he's a guy that's always sat around that 80 pitch mark like sometimes other starters around the league do. Now, he can go deep into ball games, and especially like today where he was kind of on cruise control. I mean, the similar thing in the A series, but you know, when you're on cruise control, and we've already talked about how taxed this bullpen has gotten, you would have liked to have seen him gotten the opportunity. And maybe it's just they're trying to protect him, and you know, they don't want him to go through the third time in the order and, you know, flirt with any danger there. And they're happy with him giving him six innings and they're just fine with it. And I don't know. To me, you need to let him at least try to grow. Like, we applauded this early on with the first home start for Mackenzie Gore. We applauded the fact that he sent Gore back out there. I think he was at 94 pitches and he tried to at least get through that seventh inning. It didn't work, but he at least gave him a chance. You got to at least give Jake Irvin a chance here, especially like we talked about with the bullpen. So I don't know. It's just a little bit frustrating. But to your point about Hunter Harvey as well, like, I don't want Davey to get in this comfortable habit, which it seems like it's still early in the season and he's already doing it, where I don't want him being a four out, five out, six out guy. He's a one inning reliever. And occasionally, if you're in a situation where, you know, you've only got two guys you trust, it's a high leverage situation against a good ball club, maybe then you can decide, all right, we're going to go four outs. So maybe today's a fine scenario, but he's already done this multiple times. So I don't love that, especially for a guy that dealt with injuries all throughout his career and even last year. So some questionable decisions by Davey. It worked out today, but they also got burned by it last week.
He's Toby Altizer. I'm Grant Paulson. This is Bustin' Loose Baseball. Now we could talk Jake Irvin a little bit more, because boy, has he been good. Three straight six inning outings for Irvin. You know, we're talking about length from Patrick Corbin or some of the veterans, right? I mean, he's given in, it should be seven innings a couple times, to be completely frank, but we're talking about 74 and 73 pitches to get 18 outs. One of the most efficient pitchers in the sport. The last couple times out is he's allowed one run over 12 innings, but his starts on the year, five innings, three runs, six innings, four runs, six innings, one run, and then six shutout today. He's now down to a 3-1 ERA in four starts, 23 innings, 20 strikeouts. Whip is at one on the nose. He has been fantastic. Really, really good. You look at his deeper dive breakdown today. Fastball at max was at 97 miles an hour, averaged 95.7. He threw mostly fastball, curveball, did throw some sinkers and some cutters as well. So, you know, you're looking at right around 82% of his pitches were fastball, curveball, and then he mixed in 14 of the other two offerings. But what I like is the fastball misses bats. You know, Pitching Ninja put out one of his fastballs he got a swing and miss on moving today. 38% of swings, 24 swings, were whiffs. Nine. He only had two other whiffs in the game, but 11 swings and misses, nine on the fastball, was a really, really good pitch for him up in the zone today.
Yeah, just an impressive outing overall. And even when you go back to his first two outings, I thought he pitched really well and then just ran into some hard luck toward the end and gave up some runs. So I think overall, Jake Irvin's been fantastic. And it's something where, I mean, this is a development success. We'll continue to see if he can keep it going. But, I mean, last year he was... He filled a role, right? Like, he was an encouraging sign because the Nationals haven't developed pitching very much, especially a guy that's taken a little bit later on. And so seeing him come up and be able to contribute throughout the year in the rotation was encouraging. Now it's looking like a guy, we just thought this guy was like the fifth starter, and he's looking really good. Now, it's not like he's going to be an ace, but he looks like somebody that you can depend on to be that back end of the rotation guy. And he's been efficient too. You know, our guy Vic that produces the Nats games on, you know, our station 106.7 The Fan,
Slick Vic Ferreira.
We were deliberating today, and we were talking a lot about Jake Irvin, and the thing that impressed him the most was his efficiency. The fact that, you know, we're even having this conversation through six innings, he's at 75, sub 75 pitches. That's not something you see with a lot of guys, even guys on this staff especially. I mean, you know, Mackenzie Gore, he's usually in the 90, 95, 100 pitch range by then. Josiah Gray, same thing. So the fact that he's even having the opportunity to consider going out there for the seventh, much less maybe even going out for the eighth if he has another quick inning, I think is really impressive for a guy that's that young. And like you said, basically a two-pitch pitcher like we kind of thought coming up. He's, you know, at least mixing in some other stuff, but he was very effective against the Dodgers lineup. And if you can make it work against the Dodgers, then you can probably make it work against anybody.
While we're talking about relievers, Hunter Harvey touched 99 in his four-out appearance. He's now got 17 strikeouts in 10 innings on the season with a whip at one on the nose. He's had one kind of crooked number outing he wants back. Otherwise, has been nearly flawless. Similarly, Kyle Finnegan, remember, blew the save. I think it was against the A's on the first trip of the year. Finnegan, a 3.2 ERA with nine appearances, but eight strikeouts and 8 1/3. He had a productive 13-pitch save for the 32-year-old against the Dodgers as we record this podcast after the finale and win number 2 out of 3. The game began with a C.J. Abrams solo home run. Leadoff batter, first hitter of the game, second pitch of the contest, and the superstar-to-be. The shortstop, the 23-year-old, drove a ball to deep center field over the wall. First time, I think, he's hit a home run that wasn't 400 feet. It was only 103 off the bat. Normally, he's up around 106 to 108, it feels like. But he's hitting 295. He's got a 1,000 OPS. He's now got five homers. He's homering. If you look at the numbers, five bolts and now 61 at-bats. He's homering every 11 ABs. He was homering every over 30 at-bats at a time last year. He's basically doing it at you know, to cut that pace at two-thirds. Really amazing, the start to the season with the power for C.J. Abrams.
Yeah, and it's pretty simple, Grant. Like, the easy thing, I was looking up a Baseball Savant today, just trying to figure out some various things about, you know, his success early on. And they talked about at the end of last year going into this year, I think Davey was even talking about it when we were down in West Palm Beach, about him being able to hit the fastball. And last year on fastballs, that means four-seamers, that means sinkers, cutters, all those variations of the fastball, he had a batting average of 249. He had a slug of 400. He hit eight of his home runs off of the fastball. It doesn't include all the stats today. When it hasn't fully updated on Baseball Savant, but he hit his home run today off a fastball. That means that's four home runs already this year off the fastball. And again, these numbers are actually going to be better because of the fact that it hasn't factored in today's game. But 367 batting average, 800 slug just off the fastball. Now, you know, there's other stuff we can work on, but this is so simple. If he can hit the fastball, you know, it just solves so many issues. And so that was something he struggled a bit with last year at times. And to see him come out and for them to be talking about, all right, this is the place that you need to see improvement. And early on, you're seeing that improvement. I think it's encouraging for two things. One, obviously, that's encouraging to see that he's fixed something that was maybe a bit of a weakness. But it also shows that this dude works. He is working hard, because that's not something you just turn around overnight. But the way that he has already come out and destroyed the fastballs early this season, I think just shows that he is a rising superstar, because even if there is a weakness, he's going to find it and he's going to work on it and he's going to get good at fixing it.
Yeah, I mean, look at the exit velocities, right, bro? I mean, there's just not that many guys in the sport that can routinely barrel the ball at the velocity he does at his size. I mean, it's a special package. There's a reason he was a top 10 pick. There's a reason he was an elite level prospect. It's all kind of coming to fruition right now. It's way too early in the year to have this conversation, but I was thinking about this today while watching the game. I'm salty that Mookie Betts has moved to shortstop because I think it keeps C.J. Abrams from having a really good chance to be the all-star game starter at shortstop, if you think about it. If you look right now at the shortstop position in baseball, his 10-14 OPS is second to Mookie Betts, who's at 11-37. It's better than Bobby Witt, who's been unbelievable. He's in the American League. The next best shortstop in the National League is probably either Ellie De La Cruz, who's got five home runs as well, or Orlando Arcia, who's got a 970 ops and is hitting about 380. But for the most part, you look at the best shortstops in the game, right? It's Bobby Witt or Gunnar Henderson you hear a lot about. Maybe Anthony Volpe is off to a great start. Like, C.J. Abrams is playing better right now than any other National League shortstop not named Mookie Betts. And again, it's very early. It's April 17th. But it's one of those things where about a month from now, they're going to start passing out ballots for people to vote on the All-Star game. You know, he could possibly be in the conversation to start the game if Mookie was still in the outfield. Hopefully, he keeps playing at this level and he makes his first All-Star appearance this year.
Yeah, and the crazy part, Grant, is the thing that he's best at, stealing bags, he hasn't done a whole lot of because he hasn't had a whole lot of chances because he's getting doubles and triples and homers. So many extra base hits, so his OPS is high. And he hasn't been able to steal bags yet. And that's something that's going to come when he just, you know, gets a single and he's just, you know, he doesn't get the double or the triple. He just has to settle for a single or even a walk. He hasn't had a steal outside of the one game. He stole three bags, I believe, in Cincinnati, right? So he's going to get going on the base paths as well because Lane Thomas, I think, already has eight. Joey Meneses stole a base as we record on Wednesday. He stole a base today. Like, everyone's running. And yet the guy that we expected to lead the team only has three from one game. So I'm excited to see once he gets everything going. Obviously, the power's been awesome early and the extra base hits. But I'm excited to see him on the base pass stealing some bags soon, too.
One other guy that we should call attention to just based on the exploits of this Dodgers series win. How about Jesse Winker? If you look at on-base percentage in Major League Baseball right now, Jesse Winker is up top. He came into the game today, and he leaves the game still, the number one player in Major League Baseball in on-base percentage at .485. That happens when you're hitting .365. He also has drawn 9 walks against 12 strikeouts. 9 walks is the same number as, you know, guys who have been around the league lead, right? You're talking about like Justin Turner and Jose Altuve. He's been very selective, very patient. He's not doing it with the back of the baseball card people are running from. He's got the 2 homers, including the 9th inning game tire on this road trip. What an awesome start to the year. I think a lot of people, and I might have been one of them, if I'm being honest, would have told you that Eddie Rosario with his power maybe is the guy that helps them in the outfield more. But Winker, who has stolen 2 bags, who's hit 2 homers, who's number one in all of baseball and on-base percentage, has been the best pleasant surprise of the beginning of the year.
100%. And last year, he was a huge disappointment, but you realize that he just wasn't healthy, right? We talked about this with Hassel in spring training. He wasn't healthy last year, and that's why you saw some of the numbers dip. I think that's what happened with Jesse Winker. Last year, hit sub 200, wasn't very impressive, had a slug of only 247, dealing with a back issue. He comes back this year just kind of thrilled to have an opportunity to play, and he has been fantastic for the Nationals, not just at the plate, but defensively as well. And he's one of those guys where we've talked about Rizzo making these sorts of moves where it's just a low risk sort of move that you can maybe flip at the deadline. And it looks like Jesse Winker is one of those guys. I think they were trying to hopefully hit on one of the two with him and Rosario. And it looks early on like Rosario is kind of eh. And it looks like Jesse Winker is going to be something that might bring you something at the deadline.
Yeah, you want to hit on a lottery ticket, you might want to play a couple of them, and that feels like what they did at the outfield. I also think when they bring up James Wood, it's very possible he plays center field because that's been the position where they're getting, you know, maybe the least production in terms of penciling things in moving forward. You know, you're seeing Jacob Young without Victor Robles. They're moving guys around. They're playing, you know, Rosario out of position a little bit occasionally there. I could see an outfield when James Wood comes up of Winker in left, Wood in center, and Lane Thomas in right. along those lines that you were referencing. Luis Garcia, got to pay him some love. We've done this on a couple straight pods. I feel like I beat up on Luis Garcia pretty good, and I think it's mostly been deserved. I think I was in a group that included Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez in me being over Luis Garcia. They gave him one last shot, and boy, is he making the most of it here. 15 for his first 51 at the plate. That's a 294 clip. I hit a home run the other day, but more important than the 811 OPS starting the season or being a little more selective, which, by the way, I think early last year he was doing that as well, if you remember. You know, at the beginning of the season, he got off to a pretty strong start offensively, and he was spitting on some pitches, and it looked like he'd made some major leaps offensively. And then as the year went on, he got back into some of the bad habits, and he kind of became the same guy. But you know, if you look at the metrics, the advanced analytics, you know, for like ex-WOBA, 78th percentile, ex-batting average, 74th, ex-slug, 92nd, barrel percentage, 97th in baseball right now, hard hit percentage, 94th percentile, sweet spot percentage, 63rd, whiff percentage, 67th. So he's made strides, and he's doing some good things, but where I'm really impressed, damn if he didn't have an unbelievable game against the Dodgers defensively in the matinee series winner. His defense was one of the biggest reasons why they won the game. He made two diving stops. He showed some range and got to a couple balls. I'm not sure I thought he would. Luis Garcia, friends, what a game. Have a series, kid.
Yeah, fantastic series for him. It was really cool to see. It's one of those things, though, I want to keep seeing it because everything we've seen at the plate, we've seen him do before. It's just, can he continue to do it? He, like you said, last year he had good stretches and then he'd get back into bad habits. I mean, last year he had a five hit ball game in Kansas City and then didn't have a hit the rest of the series and kind of struggled after that. So he's shown you his potential plenty of times. Now it's about continuing to do it. And he's done it so far at the plate this year. But the big thing, like you said, is the defense. Like, we haven't seen him make defensive plays like that in a long time, if ever. Last year, I thought at the beginning of the year, he played some solid defense, and then it kind of went downhill. But so far this year, he's played really good defensively, making plays that, frankly, I didn't know he could make. You know, so it's really cool to see that. Hopefully, it's something that continues on, because I want Mike Rizzo to have to make the hard decisions. I'd rather not you not make them for him by being bad or not doing your job correctly. I'd rather you make him have to make the hard decisions, whether it's a trade, whether it's moving someone to a different spot, whatever it is. But the way Luis Garcia's playing, you know, we talked about Lipscomb and all these, you can't take Garcia out of the lineup. He's playing so well, and that's a good thing.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Later.
All right, I want to look ahead to this five-year anniversary celebration over the weekend with the Astros briefly. And I think there's going to be time for us next pod. We can go through all the specifics and talk about who came back. I mean, the list is bountiful. It's a lot of the guys you'd anticipate, right? Some of the guys that are already around, Zimmerman, Doolittle, you know, Baby Shark, Parra, those types in the organization. But then guys like Adam Eaton, who I recently caught up with, who's thrilled to be coming back, hasn't been back in a few years. Brian Dozier is coming back and hanging out at the ballpark. There are many, many more. Anibal Sanchez, hopefully he wears his yellow shades that he used to wear in the dugout with Parra, right? But the big question I think we should hit here and just kind of put a flag in the ground on, is Steven Strasburg going to be there? I acted like it was a definitive when we talked about this a week or two ago after he and the team came to an agreement. Like, they were at odds. This was a stare down. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I don't know how long ago it was, 10 days ago, we find out Strasburg and the Nationals have reached an agreement. He's officially retiring. He put out a statement, and so did the team. And it was like, you know, hunky-dory in a way. Now, we knew there was still awkwardness. He's salty, they're salty, whatever the situation is. But my point was they wouldn't have done this now. They were beating the clock. They were making sure he's going to be at the ballpark. And frankly, Toby, that's the handshake. Like, that's Ted Leontis and Muriel Bowser hugging and having a press conference after they both hated each other's guts, seemingly for a bunch of months, right? You've now kissed and made up, so to speak, if you're Strauss and the Nats. If he's not there, it's going to be really, really weird. And I'm not going to be that pumped about that from Strauss's perspective. I guess it's possible he will be. They didn't put him on the list of guys that they're expecting. I've been saying all along, well, maybe they'll just fire up his walkout music and he'll like come out of the tunnel up the steps and everyone will go crazy. Brian Dozier, for what it's worth, on the Sports Junkies on 106.7 The Fan on Wednesday said he thought Strauss would be there. But I heard from someone in the organization, I don't know if he really has talked to Strauss or knows that much about the situation. I think he's on his farm and he just answered a question as best he could. So I don't know, man. I was kind of full steam ahead. Strauss will be there. That's given now. And I'm starting to hedge on that as the team seems to do what they can, it feels like, to say, here's who's here, and Strasburg's name's not in lights.
Yeah, I don't want to be pre-mad about this, GP. Like, we'll see this weekend if he actually shows up or not. So I'm not going to get too mad right now, assuming that he's not going to be there, but it just seems like he's not. If he's not on the list, and you've heard from various sources.
So why wouldn't you promote that? I mean, I guess if it is a big surprise, then way to go, Steven, way to go, Nationals, and we could talk about how cool that was. But you would think they'd want to use his name to move the needle. It's his big return. It's the first time you get to thank him after his retirement. That would be the highlight of the whole weekend. I get maybe the value in having a surprise, but don't you think they would want to let people know? It's not like they're sold out. They're trying to sell tickets.
Yeah, it's one of those things like, you know, whenever they do those Capitals things where they're honoring John Carlson or they're honoring TJ Oshie, they tell you, hey, we're doing this. We'd like you to be in your seats by this time because that way you can see the, you know, the ceremony. People just wander around the concourse all the time, GP. People roll in the second inning. People roll in the third inning. You know, just they got stuff going on. You know, you want to know if Strasburg is going to be there because guess what? I'm going to get to the ballpark an hour early. I want to make sure I'm in my seat. I want to make sure I get to see him walk out on the field. I want to make sure I'm there to applaud him. You would think that they would let people know about that. I don't think it's something where they're trying to be secretive and it'd be a cool thing where they announce everyone else and out of the bullpen comes Steven Strasburg. That'd be awesome. But I just don't think that's going to be the case. And like you said, what was the whole point of coming to the agreement then? Like, I just assumed that when they came to the agreement ahead of the deadline, which was this Astros series, that was the reason that he could be there at the 5-year celebration, the World Series right. MVP could
otherwise,
be there.
Otherwise, why not just let it linger? Like, someone might say, well, they needed the roster spot or whatever. Not any more than they did all offseason and all spring training and a month ago, right? You know what I mean? Like, nothing changed. The timing just seemed to me like, oh, thank God they beat the clock. The countdown was on. He'll be at the celly. That's why they did this.
Yeah. And to me, like, you know, Strauss, I think, was kind of in the clear previously because, yeah, he earned the money. Of course, he's going to want the money. And the Nationals didn't necessarily want to give him the money. So, you know, that's how that whole fiasco was kind of going on. And it was like, all right, well, maybe the Nationals are the bad guy, right? Depending upon which side you were, they come to the agreement. Now it's Strauss is the bad guy if he doesn't show up because they've figured things out. Even if it's not like, you know, they're thrilled to see each other and they're going to give each other a hug on the field, like everything's mended from what we know. So you should be at the ballpark. And to me, like, Steven Strasburg, we know, isn't going to want the most recognition. He's not someone that wants to trot out there and get an applause every other weekend. Like, oh, yeah, number 37. Like, he's not that guy. We get that. He doesn't love all the extra.
You're not that guy, pal. You're not that guy.
Exactly right. He doesn't love all that extra recognition and adoration and stuff, and that's fine. But to me, there's a couple more times that Strauss needs to be at Nats Park. That's it. 2-3 times, whatever. One of them should be the 5-year anniversary where they're honoring the team. You know, if it's 15 years and he decides not to come, that's different. That's way down the road. This is the first time they're really doing something big for this world championship team, and he's not going to be there. The only other time to me that he has to be there before he can just disappear is his number retirement. Like, that's it. You don't have to come out.
We're not asking for a lot here, pal.
You don't have to come out of your cave more than two or three times. You can just chill at home and look, maybe it's something to do with his health. If you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, maybe it's something where he doesn't want to roll out in front of the crowd and he's hobbled, but you know, his arm's messed up still. I don't know. We have no idea, but you'd like to see him at Nats Park. And so I don't want to, it's kind of rambled on a little bit, but I don't want to get too mad until we see if he actually shows up or not. But I will say, I'm going to be disappointed if he's not there.
Dang, Zoom.
All right, let's get to the prospects. We did not get to talk about Mitchell Parker's start, I guess. We broke down who he is and what his deal is before his major league debut on our last pod. But he did now pitch once for the Nationals, and I would say it went pretty well. Admirable performance, 4 hits and 2 runs earned, over 5 innings against the Dodgers through 81 pitches. Did not walk anybody, which one of the bugaboos for him in the minor leagues at different points has been that he does have some walk issues that he's been trying to iron out and clean up. And as he's gotten closer to the big leagues, he's gotten a little more refined in that area. Struck out 4 in his 5 innings. So number one, no walks, I thought was awesome. Against that lineup, anxieties and nerves you're going to have in a big league debut in a historical ballpark, you can't ask for much more than he provided. I'm not a big, how should I say this? I like Mitchell Parker a lot. He's a lefty. He can touch 96. He, I think, has a chance to be like a multi-inning reliever or someone that can help them a bunch. The idea, though, of 2 pitches, which is basically what he is. He's like fastball, curveball, throws a splitter every now and then. But it's basically it's 2 pitches. It's mid-90s kind of at peak. It's not a profile that you're going to necessarily dominate with at the major league level or pitch in the middle of a rotation. And so I think the ceiling here is maybe back of the rotation if he continues to improve. But what I want to say that, you know, it sounds like I'm not a big fan. Again, I think this guy can help the big league ball club for the next several years in the right role. I also think this is the type of win the organization needs more of. We've talked about it with Jake Irvin. You see it with Jacob Young. We've seen Jake Alou and some other guys come up and have some moments. Like, at some point, it can't just be the blue chippers you got for Juan Soto or the studs that you got back in some of these trades, or, you know, Gray making an all-star team who Scherzer and Turner got you, or K-Barrett, who's been ill and out for a week. You also need to hit on some of those other guys that were in the system before you flooded the system with talent and started picking in the top 5. And I think this is a big deal for the Nats staff, for a lot of the guys that are still here who have been developing, drafting players for years. If you start to get some of these guys like Jake Irvin, no household name, you know, like Mitchell Parker, no real fanfare to come up, It the whole thing looks better. It looks like there's more depth than they get credit for.
Yeah, really good start. I mean, like we talked about when we were previewing it, Jake Irvin was kind of this guy last year, and look what he's doing this year. We're talking about him, you know, taking that next step and improving. Maybe this is something where Mitchell Parker can do something similar, you know, going forward the rest of this year and even into next year. Like, this is a guy that's, it's not like we expect him to be the ace of the staff, but he came out and pitched really well against the Dodgers. And, you know, when you come up, your first major league hitter is Mookie Betts and you strike him out. You're facing Shohei Ohtani. You struck him out as well. He struck out Betts again and he struck out Teoscar Hernandez. And you look at some of the swings guys we're putting on there. I think that that shows you that he's got some good stuff. Like, the swing that he got from Ohtani to strike him out showed me that, well, maybe there is a little bit of something there. And, you know, it's his first major league start. It's not like there's an extensive book, you know, so it's something that, you know, the league's going to adjust, and then you have to adjust to the league adjusting to you. We'll see when all that stuff happens. But first major league start, you're out at Dodger Stadium on Jackie Robinson Day, which I think is ironic or interesting because we don't even know what number Jake or Mitchell Parker wears. I've seen him wear 42. But Dodger Stadium, Jackie Robinson Day, facing Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and you only give up 2 runs in 5 innings. You'll take that every day of the week.
All right, rest of some of the guys in the system to hit. James Wood. First time this season really cooled off over a couple of days at the plate. Baseball is happening. 0 for 9, 1 for 13 coming into play today. Went 1 for 1 and came around the base paths. But the game ended up getting halted by rain. I mean, enough, by the way, Rochester. Enough with the weather. It's been asinine. Every single time I turn around, they're in a delay. They're getting PPD. They're not playing. Can I just watch James Wood play baseball for God's sake? And by the way, Toby Altizer is my guy. I love Toby. I'm a Toby Altizer stan. I'm a Toby Altizer mark. I can see it on Toby's face. He thinks a butt is coming, but a butt is not coming. I just wanted to tell people, I walk into the studio today. I was literally, I'm just a James Wood mark. So I was going to go pull up my computer to see what he did in his first at bat. And what is Toby doing? Toby's got the Rochester Red Wings game on his phone in front of him at work. And he's like, James Wood already got a hit. That's why Toby's my guy, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Grant. Yeah, I was watching the game and I turn it on and I'm like, all right, so they delayed the game. It was supposed to start at 11:05. The
shocker,
first pitch was
by the way
at 11:45. And I turn it on. I'm like, all right, so now we're in the clear and downpour.
Toby, I know we can't afford a dome, okay? I know that our, you know, several hundred listeners to this pod for each episode, and by the way, we're trying to grow this thing. Can you guys help us a little bit? Spread the word on Bustin' Loose Baseball, huh? Tell your pals. Get some Nats fans to listen. Bustin' Loose Baseball, subscribe, rate, review. Let them know that we do this twice a week. We get a new pod available for you on Monday and Thursday every single week, but Toby, I bring this up to say if we all throw together on like a GoFundMe, I'm not saying that we could put a roof or a dome over top of Rochester, but maybe we could just get like a bunch of people to hold a sheet over top of the ballpark or something and just be in lifeguard stands, like a very makeshift situation. Is it too much to ask? I want to watch a little James Wood baseball, for God's sake, man.
I know. You just want to watch that guy play. And I felt bad because you're watching it. And when you stepped in, Trey Lipscomb was at the plate. Could you imagine Trey Lipscomb, what he's gone through in the last couple of weeks? He goes from being in Rochester and thinking, oh, no, I got to play in this awful weather, to playing with the Nationals, to going back. And his first AB is just downpouring. And he's like, I thought I got away from this.
Welcome to the show.
Just awful. We need baseball in Rochester, so maybe we need to set up a GoFundMe and figure something out so we can actually get to see the boys play.
Time is coming for James Wood. Dylan Cruz tonight took a 0-for-4, did steal a base, come around, score a run. He's been very, very streaky and still, you know, just not putting it all together at the plate. But, you know, it's funny, for as much as you look and you see Dylan Cruz 1-for-4 or 0-for-3 or whatever it is, numbers are decent. You know, he's hitting .245. Obviously, that's not what you're aiming for, but he's got a .740 OPS. He's getting on base at like a .330 clip. And what I mean by that is, like, I think if you ask the average person, whether it's a prospect, insider type, or just a Nats fan, they'd go, oh, yeah, Cruz's start to the year has been super disappointing. Well, his start to the year has actually been kind of league average-ish, right? But we're disappointed because we're all expecting so much. But because the loud has been so loud, the big games have been so gargantuan, right? He had a 4-for-5 where he had 7 total bases with a home run. He had another 3-for-5 where he had a bolt and 6 total bases, a couple extra base hits. Like, you take those two games out of the equation, and this is what happens super early in the year when you only have 40 at-bats, it looks pretty ugly. But I could say the same thing about his two worst games, right? If you take out his 0-for-5 with 4 strikeouts to start the season, and then a subsequent 0-for-4 with a couple of Ks, you know, now you're 9 at-bats taken away, 6 strikeouts vanish, and you're 10-for-32 at the plate. And, you know, after taking away 2 games, he's now hitting .313. So I guess my point is it's just too early to take a lot out of the numbers.
Yeah, and if you look back at yesterday's game as we record on Wednesday, so Tuesday's game, Robert Hassel in a tie game hits a triple, and then Dylan Cruz drives him in with a walk-off single. So, you know, there's just bits and pieces. Again, it's a growth for him. You know, if you expected him to come out red hot and work right away, then sure, you're kind of like the rest of us. We were hoping that he was going to be right in the majors right away. It just didn't happen that way, and that's also not normal. Like, what he's going through is very normal.
Question. Yeah, sorry to cut you off. I want to ask you a question. Do you agree with me that if he is hitting .240 in double A with a, whatever, what did I say, 760 OPS or whatever it is, 740 OPS, if he's doing that in, let's say, a month and a half, I would be pretty disappointed. That's fair to say, right?
Yeah.
Would you be disappointed?
But
so I guess... Correct me or you take it where you want, but basically for us, it's early enough with some real positive signs that there's no reason to be disappointed yet.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's just like if you've watched him, he just feels like he's waiting to take off. I think the one thing that concerns me is the number of strikeouts. But again, it's so early on that I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. And I think what a lot of Nationals fans have fallen prey to is they've looked over in Texas and saw Wyatt Langford. And they're like, well, what the heck, right? This guy was taken after Dylan Cruz. But it's just something where we thought it would click right away and it hasn't. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the normal progression of a minor league baseball player. And he's going through it. And so hopefully it's something that we see soon. But I think even then, Grant, like even if it's a month from now and he's still only got like a 750 OPS and we're maybe a little bit disappointed, that doesn't mean he's going to be a bad ball player. It might click in July. It might click in August. It's just one of those things where I think it's in there. It's just got to come out at some point, and it hasn't yet. But when it does, and I've said this every time we talk about Cruz, to me, as soon as he gets like one good week going, or he just finds something at the plate that one day and gets things kind of rolling, I think the floodgates are going to open, and we're just waiting for him to kind of put back-to-back games together and put that whole week together. We haven't gotten that yet. But I mean, you also can't ignore, like, yes, he's had too many 0-for-4 three punchy days, but he's also had 4-for-5 grand slam kind of days as well. So it's not as if there's been no good with Dylan Cruz.
Yeah. You were talking about him and Langford and, like, you know, the comparing that people do. I don't know why I had shades of just like some movie where there's a kid who is in middle school and everyone else has gone through puberty or something. And he's like, but why don't I have hair under my arms, Mom? And she's like, it's going to happen, sweetie. Don't worry. You know, it's like Dylan Cruz is just looking at MLB Tonight or MLB Network, and he sees Wyatt Langford in the show already, who, by the way, you know, this will sound dumb saying this about a guy who was in college last year. He has not quite done what I anticipated. I thought he would hit for more power. He's been about 250. I think his OPS is in the 600s. It's hard. You know, look at Jackson Holliday. He's 1-for-100 to start his big league career. I think he's 1-for-23 right now. And it's not like that means he shouldn't have been called up, right? There's plenty of other guys in the big leagues that are 1-for-their-last-20 as well that we're not really living and dying with every at-bat with. He's hit the ball hard at times, but it is difficult when you get called up. There's no doubt about it that you're going to have to make some adjustments. I will read a couple of the comments that we've gotten since our last Boston Loose Baseball episode. Remember, we will gladly shout you out. All you got to do is give us a 5-star rating, ideally, and leave a sweet little comment. So let's do that. We've got Nats Nut 2. Let's clap it up for Nats Nut 2. There we go. Love that they cover the Nats minor league players and feature interviews with players as well as the major leaguers. Thank you, Nats Nut. How about we shout out for Kemps 0724? Don't know you, but I love you. Kemps says, these guys are great because they have a lot of passion for the Nats, and that is hard during this rebuilding stage, ain't it? They keep it interesting, and I love it. So see what we did there. We read those compliments. We feel better about ourselves. It's very shameful, and we're fine with it. We are absolutely fine with it. So keep them coming, Tobes.
Absolutely. Share the podcast with all your buddies, anybody that's into baseball even. Maybe we can convert them to being a Nationals fan, Grant. Hopefully it's not that long before this baseball team's winning some ball game, so maybe we can become the old bandwagon team here for some fans pretty soon.
For producer Darius and for Toby, I'm Grant saying so long. Episode 110, Boston Loose Baseball will be back in your feed with a new installment after the Astros series ready to go when you pick up the phone on Monday morning.